The following is a sermon by Pastor Todd Dykstra, teaching pastor of Maranatha Bible Church of Comstock Park, Michigan. For more information, go to mbcmi.org.
You may have heard of the study conducted a number of years ago to calculate the influence of a father's life upon his children and his descendants. A group of researchers, sociologists, decided to study two different men who lived at the same time in the 1700s. One of those men was by the name of Max Jukes. They studied 1,200 descendants of Max Jukes. He was a very ungodly man married to an ungodly woman. Of their 1,200 descendants, 440 of them, their lives were destroyed by alcohol. 310 were vagrants. 190 of them were public prostitutes. 130 of them were convicted criminals. There were 60 habitual thieves and 7 murderers. And it's estimated that that generation or those descendants cost the state of New York over $1 million. The other man that was studied was Jonathan Edwards. You've heard of him. Very godly man, pastor, theologian, president of Princeton College, one of the greatest theological minds ever in our country. He preached that famous sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God, and he was used by the Lord to bring the first great awakening in America. He married Sarah Pierpont. They had 11 children, and sociologists studied their legacy and found that of his descendants, 120 were college professors, 110 were lawyers, 60 medical doctors, 30 judges, 14 college presidents, a dean of a law school, a dean of a medical school, 3 governors, 3 mayors, 3 U.S. senators, and a vice president of the United States in Aaron Burr. And added to that, there were 300 pastors, missionaries, and theological professors. Those are vastly different legacies, vastly different heritages. One man lives for himself without any consideration for God and what honors him, and another man gives his life to the glory of God, his word, the gospel of Jesus Christ, and the fear of the Lord, and you can see how differently those men's legacies were. All of that just underscores how important it is for families to live according to God's design. We, of course, know that the family unit is the basic building block of society. This is the way God has ordained it. He's designed it to be this way, the place where children are raised in the fear and admonition of the Lord, the place where children are taught the scriptures, where they are brought face to face with Christ and the gospel, where parents are the professors and children are the students and the Word of God is the curriculum. This is God's design for the family. It is to be a redemptive community. It is to be a theological community. It is to be a place where the gospel is the glue that holds families together, where every moment is a God moment and every situation is an opportunity to teach and proclaim the good news of Christ. And for that reason, parenting is to be done not by the state, not by the government, not by the schools, not even by the church. And let me just say, we have a wonderful children's ministry here. We have a wonderful youth ministry here. But all of these ministries exist to come alongside parents. They're not meant to replace parents. God has designed the family to be the place where parents teach their children gospel realities. A sad thing, however, is that families are under attack. Families are under attack. And from the beginning, it has been Satan's MO to destroy the family. You can see it right from the beginning. He led Adam and Eve into sin. He was also behind the first murder when Cain killed Abel. From the very start, Satan has sought to tear the family apart. And we just need to look around us and see that that is still what he's seeking to do. So all of this underscores how critically important it is for our families to be places that stand firm in this godless society where there are godly marriages and there are godly moms and there are godly dads and parents who stand firm against Satan's schemes and refuse to capitulate to worldly philosophies. This is the theme of Psalm 127. And by the way, Psalm 128. You may not know this, but these two psalms are twin psalms. And both of them have at their theme this idea that families should be forged by robust faith in God. These are known as psalms of ascent. Look at the title of Psalm 127. It says, "A Song of Ascent." This is the title that characterizes 15 psalms from Psalm 120 to Psalm 134. If you were to look at all of those songs, they all start with that title, A Song of Ascent. These were songs that families sang as they traveled to Jerusalem. Three times a year, it was customary for Jewish families to make a pilgrimage. They're also known as pilgrim psalms. They went up to Jerusalem, and they would worship there in those festivals. By the way, you always went up to Jerusalem. Jerusalem sits at 2,700 feet above sea level. So everywhere you were in Israel, you always had to travel up to Jerusalem. It's why they're called songs of ascent. You would ascend to Jerusalem on this pilgrimage to worship the Lord at the temple. By the way, you remember Jesus, when he was 12, made a journey to Jerusalem. And it says in Luke chapter 2, they went up to Jerusalem according to the custom of the feast. So, it is very likely that Jesus, in that caravan, with his family and other families, sang these songs. These are songs meant to instill in us truth. These two psalms, Psalm 127 and 128, are songs about family life. And these pilgrims would travel on their way to Jerusalem, and as they would do so, they would gather as what would be essentially family worship time as they traveled and camped for the nights on the way there, and they would sing these songs. Psalm 127 and 128 are the eighth and the ninth in these 15 psalms. They're right in the middle, which highlights how important godly families are. So this week, we're going to look at Psalm 127. Next week, we're going to look at Psalm 128. Follow along as I read Psalm 127. A song of ascent of Solomon. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman keeps awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to retire late, to eat the bread of painful labors. He who gives to his beloved even in the sleep. Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate. Five short verses that really give us a blueprint, a divine blueprint for a blessed home. These are songs about how we know how God blesses families. In fact, notice verse 5 that I just read says, how blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. Look into chapter 128. Look at verse 1. How blessed is everyone who fears the Lord. Look at verse 2. How you will be happy and it will be well with you. Look at verse 4. Behold, for thus shall the man be blessed. Look at verse 5. The Lord bless you from Zion. These are psalms about how you know God's blessing rests on your family. To say it another way, if you want God's smile, on your family, if you want God's favor on your family, these are the evidences of this. Let me just say that there's going to be truth in here for everyone here this morning. If you're a child, there's going to be truth in here for you as you listen. This is what your parents are trying to do. If you're a dad or a mom, this is what we must be doing. If you're a grandparent, this is what you're praying for your grandchildren and what you're encouraging them to do. If you are a single parent, this is what you are to be doing in your family. And if you're a single, don't tune me out, this is what you need to be looking for someday in a spouse. This is what you need to be as you think about raising a family. So there's something in here for all of us. But let me just say that this is a psalm that is particularly masculine. These two psalms have a masculine emphasis. Notice, they're both written, well, this first one's written by Solomon, the title, A Song of Ascents of Solomon. This is Solomon's words about a godly family. This is a husband, a father, writing these truths. Now, add to that, in Psalm 127, the masculine emphasis that we see here. Look at verse 1. It speaks of a builder who labors. It speaks of building a city and a watchman. These are male terminologies. Look at verse 4. It speaks of a warrior. That's a male position. Look in verse 5, how blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. Skip down to Psalm 128, verse 3, your wife shall be like a fruitful vine. Look at verse 4 of Psalm 128, for thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. These are words particularly written to fathers, dads. These are the kind of men that God desires in the home. These are the spiritual leaders that we are meant to be. These are the spiritual leaders who are approved by God. If you want to lead your family well, men, if you want to be a good dad, and you want to be a good husband, if you want to be a good grandfather, these are the qualities that need to be there. And so I want to speak to all of you in particular. As I said, there's something here for everyone, but I want to speak particularly to you men this morning. Because how you go, your family goes. How you go, the church goes. But particularly in the home, how you go, your family goes. Man, I want you to think about the fact that you are a spiritual thermostat for your families. Thermostats control the temperature. And so you set the spiritual temperature for your home. And if you're cold to the things of God, if you're disinterested in the things of God, if the gospel, the word, if Christ, if church, if godliness, holiness, if these things are not your passion and they are not your desire, then I promise you, your family is going to be affected by that. If you're cold to spiritual realities, it is likely that your wife and children will be as well. On the other hand, men, if you are warm to the things of God, if you are hungry for the truth, you love Christ, you love His Word, you want to walk with Him, church is important, body life is important, the glory of God is important, spiritual realities are important. If that's your passion, then I promise you, your wife and your kids are going to reap the benefits of that. You're going to protect them. You're going to see them raised in an environment which they thrive spiritually. Children are going to be nurtured and brought up in the admonition of the Lord, and you're going to be a means of blessing to your family. And I can tell you, over decades of ministry, I've seen both. And I've seen it in the church. I have sadly seen men who are indifferent to these things. And they're happy to let their wives be the ones who take care of the spiritual things in the home. They're happy to delegate that and relegate that to their wife. And they're largely disinterested in spiritual things, and church isn't important, and family worship time is not important, and they're happy to just let others take care of that, including the church. And I can tell you, over 30 years of ministry, I have had many women come to me and say, I just want them to lead. I just want him to make the things of the Lord a priority. How? How do I help him see that? How do I encourage him in that? Because he's not leading us. And I can tell you, men, if that's you, your wife is craving that. On the flip side, I have seen men, many of you here today, families, homes that are led by parents like this, and men who are like this, and husbands who are like this, and fathers who are like this, and there's this trickle-down effect of blessing that comes to the families, and they're thriving, and they're growing, and they're flourishing because of the husbands. Guys, let me just say, I know this is a weighty task. I have come largely through the parenting years. Our youngest is 18, and we're mostly through these parenting years. But I remember the weight of this responsibility. Still feel it to some degree. We don't parent as much as we used to. But I still remember the burden that comes from being out in front and feeling the weight of the fact that my children's spiritual interests are in many senses connected to my ability to lead them there. Not that we're in charge of their salvation, but I felt that burden. Men, we lead a burdened life for our kids, for our families. I know you can relate. But we all need to recognize the massive responsibility that parents in general have, but particularly what men have when it comes to the leadership in their homes. Psalm 127 is going to force us to ask the question, what do I trust in? And Psalm 128 is going to force us to ask the question, what do I fear? Psalm 127, which we're going to see this morning, deals with the dangers of trying to do anything on our own. The dangers of trying to do anything when it comes to our family life and our own strength and our own abilities. Trying to be spiritual leaders with our own efforts, it's going to fail all the time. We need to be taught this lesson of utter dependence on the Lord for him to work in our families. And so with that in mind, I want to give you two elements in the divine blueprint for a blessed home. Two elements that will help us understand what God's prescription for a blessed home is. This is how you can be certain that your leadership in the home, your parenting in the home, is going to, Lord willing, bring his blessing, the Lord's blessing, to your wife and to your children. So two elements in the divine blueprint for a blessed home, or two ways that a man leads well in the home. Number one, first, is an utter dependence on the Lord in the mundane matters of life. The first thing that Solomon wants us to understand in the first two verses of Psalm 127 is that if we're going to approach family life in a way that is truly honoring to the Lord and brings blessing to our families, then we must approach this with an utter dependence on him in every area of life, including our families. Look at the first two verses of Psalm 127. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman keeps awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to retire late, to eat the bread of painful labors. For he gives to his beloved even in his sleep. I want you to notice the language here. There's building language in verse 1. The construction of a city in verse 1. There's a watchman who's keeping guard in verse 1. There's labor in verse 2. These are the normal expressions of life. These are what we do in life. We build things, we work, we labor, we watch, we guard. This is a reference to the sphere of our influence. Particularly, it's in reference to the family. Areas of responsibility that the Lord has given us in our homes to shepherd and train and teach our children. This is what a father is to do when it comes to his family. He builds them. He labors on their behalf. He watches them. He guards them. He works hard for them. So it is in general in the mundane areas of life, and it is particular in our homes, that there needs to be an utter dependence on the Lord. We know this because I want you to notice in these first two verses the word vain. It occurs three times. It occurs twice in verse 1 and once in verse 2. The Hebrew word vain refers to something that's empty, meaningless. It has lost all value. You remember, of course, that Solomon wrote Ecclesiastes. This is how he begins Ecclesiastes. He says, vanity of vanities, all is vanities. This is how he ends Ecclesiastes. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. He's saying that when you approach life without an eye toward God, without a view toward him, without a dependence on him, everything you do is going to be vain. Futile, empty. All activity attempted without the Lord is launched in vain. All the effort, all the hours, all the labors, everything you do, the ways you pour yourself into all of your life's activities, if you do that without an eye towards God, without a dependence upon the Lord, then Solomon says it is empty and meaningless and futile. And I want you to notice these three examples that Solomon gives to underscore this. Notice the first one in verse 1. He says, in verse 1, unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Could be an actual house. But I think Solomon has something in mind here more than just the construction of a building. I don't think he's talking about a physical structure that you build with hammer and nails. I think he's talking about a family. How do you build a family? How do you build a family that honors the Lord? How do you build a family that brings God's blessing into the home? Well, first of all, you have to do it with an eye towards God. Unless the Lord builds that house, they labor in vain who build it. Is this how you approach your family, men? Or is it puny, feeble efforts that you put forth, gutting it out in your own effort, in your own power, thinking God's going to bless that? Or do you come before the Lord with an absolute attitude of dependence that says, Lord, help me. I can't do this. My own heart is sinful. Their heart is sinful. We're battling the world, the flesh, and the devil. There are spiritual forces against us that I am not capable of handling on my own. So, Lord, I need you. Desperately, I need you to assist us in this endeavor in our home to raise these children, to know the Lord, to walk with the Lord, to obey the Lord, that your glory would be manifest in our family. Lord, I can't do this in my own strength. I can't regenerate anyone. I don't have enough wisdom to do this in my own power. Lord, I need you. I'm desperate. Dependence is in view here. Trusting the Lord, depending on the Lord, relying on the Lord. Solomon wants us to understand you can't build a home or a family in your own resources. Unless he builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. So guys, let me just ask you, parents, let me just ask you, are you spinning your wheels? Working incessantly, doing all kinds of things, thinking that God must bless all of these labors, and yet you're not truly dependent on the Lord. You're not looking to him with an eye that says, Lord, I'm desperate for your help. You can't build your house without the Lord's help. Notice, secondly, in verse 1, you can't protect your family without God's help. Notice in verse 1, he says, unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman keeps awake in vain. The idea here is now that of a protector. There's a watchman. You know what a watchman does? They stand on the edge of the city walls. They look for enemies coming. They look for any threats that might be posing a danger to that city. Their job is to be alert. Their job is to be awake. They're to scan the horizon for any approaching danger. That's what good parents do. They protect their children. They protect their home. They're alert to the influences that could threaten their families. Mom and dad are staying up on things that could do harm to their children. And dads in particular are watchmen. They're looking. They're alert. They're attentive. They're not spiritually asleep. They're paying attention to what's going on in their home, what their kids are exposed to. They're monitoring that. They're careful with that. They want to physically protect their families, but they also want to create a safe home atmosphere that guards families from harmful spiritual influences. You can't do that on your own. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman keeps awake in vain. You need the Lord's help to do this. You can't do this in your own strength. You need the Lord's wisdom. You need His help. He's the true protector of our families. One writer says the idea is not, quote, that the Lord takes up a literal sword and shield to defend the houses. Rather, His invisible hand guards the very homes that He builds from the evil influences that would harm those who live within. Who's your true protector, parents? It's not you. It's your Lord. So you're in utter dependence on Him, not only to build your family, but you're in utter dependence to protect your family. This brings us to the third example of this. It's in verse 2. You can't provide for your family in your own power. You can't build your family in your own strength. You can't protect your family in your own strength, nor can you provide for them sufficiently in your own power. Look at verse 2. It is vain for you to rise up early, to retire late, to eat the bread of painful labors, for He gives to His beloved even in his sleep. He's talking here about labor, work, provision for your homes. Now listen, that's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. Work is of the Lord. He has given us work to do. Work is commended in the Scriptures. Just read Proverbs, and it's all throughout Proverbs about the importance of industriousness and diligence and labor. Colossians 3 says, we're to do our work heartily as unto the Lord. 1 Timothy 5:8 says, if anyone does not provide for his own family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So labor is good. Hard work is good. The Lord blesses that, and He calls us to do that. He summons us to a life of diligence and labor on behalf of Him and for our families. But you need to understand that Solomon's point in verse 2 is you can't do that in your own strength. It's vain for you to rise up early, to retire late. It's vain to eat the bread of painful labors. He's talking here about you just working yourself to the bone. Any workaholics here? Don't raise your hand. Anyone at work before the sun's up and at work when the sun's down? Anybody here burning the candle at both ends, throwing yourself at your work in feverish activity, working long hours, long days, gutting it out, sweat, toil, tears. Notice he says it's vain to do this. It's vain to eat the bread of painful labors. You throw yourself in, you sweat, you put all this effort in, and you get bread from your painful efforts. And he says it's vain to eat that. You're eating bread gained by wearisome labor. You're exhausting yourself if it's all done without an eye toward the Lord. You say, well, if I don't work, I don't eat. Yep, true. But notice the end of verse 2. For he gives to his beloved, even in his sleep. Don't you love that? Could be taken a couple of different ways. It could be he gives to his beloved what they need in his sleep, or it could mean he gives sleep to those whom he loves. Either way is probably acceptable. If it's taken the first way, he gives to his beloved what they need in this sleep, it could mean that even when you're sleeping, when your head hits the pillow, the Lord is still providing. He's still giving you what you need. He's still sustaining you. He's still strengthening you. Or it could mean in all of your labors and all of your hardships, he gives you rest and sleep. And the antidote to your anxiety and your restlessness and all of your frantic efforts is to know that the Lord is giving you exactly what you need. Either way, whatever way you take it, and there's a different textual variance on which way to take it, the point is the same. God provides for your needs. So work hard, absolutely, but know that you must depend on him. Why? Because look at verse 2. Who are you? You're his beloved. It is vain for you to rise early, to retire late, to eat the bread of painful labors, for he gives to his beloved, even in his sleep. If you're God's child, if you belong to him, he loves you. He's not going to leave you. He's going to care for you. He's going to sustain you. He's going to strengthen you in your efforts to minister to your home and minister to your family and build them and protect them and provide for them. But you must recognize that without the Lord, all of this work is done in vain. So I just want to ask you, parents, is this the mindset that you have in your home? Dads in particular, is this the attitude that you have? Is this how you approach your family? Lord, I need your help. I'm going to do my part. I'm going to work, and I'm going to be the watchman, and I'm going to look, and I'm going to protect my family, and I want to build them up in the things of the Lord, and I want to provide for them, but I recognize that I can't do this on my own, and I need your strength, and I need your resources, and I need your help, and I need Christ, and I need your spirit, and I need your word. And if you're not there, just remember, you can't save your children in any way. You need the Lord to do that. You're the vehicle. You might be the means. You're going to sow the seeds for that in your parenting, in your discipling, in your mentoring. All of that's true, but you have to recognize you can do none of that apart from the Lord. It's pretty humbling. This should put us on our knees. This should make us realize how utterly dependent we are to make sure that our home is centered on God. You need him to help you with that. This has a way of putting a right perspective in our minds and our hearts that if God doesn't bless this labor, nothing good is going to happen. This is what godly parents recognize. This is what godly dads recognize. This is what good spiritual leaders recognize in their home, that in order for God to bless this family, it's going to come as men make God central in their homes. Parents are always pointing back to the Lord. The Word of God is the authority. Christ is the aim. His teaching is what is preeminent in that home. Why? Because what did Jesus say? John 15, verse 5, apart from me, you can do nothing. You can't labor in your own power. You can't work in your own power. You can't earn an income in your own power. Ultimately, it all comes from the Lord anyway. He's the giver of these gifts. So, men, let me just ask you, is this how you think about your homes? Is this how you think about your spiritual leadership? Can I just say that this is what true masculinity looks like? We live in a culture that tells us true masculinity is marked by those who hunt and fish and athletes and incredible businessmen who make a lot of money and have a lot of possessions and have status and stature. This is what our culture says. That's a real man. And Solomon says, no. True masculinity is marked by dependence. Men on their knees. Men seeking the Lord, men asking for help, men praying, parents who are making the things of the Lord their aim, their focus, their design by faith, by prayer, trusting the Lord for all the resources that that family needs, keeping Him front and center. That's what marks biblical masculinity. So if you're here today and you're trying to figure out what it means to be a spiritual leader, can I just tell you, this is where it starts. It starts with utter dependence, utter recognition. You're weak, I'm weak, He's strong, we're dependent, we are needy, and all of God's blessings through our spiritual leadership are going to come through Him. So can I just ask you, is this how you approach your parenting? Grandparents, is this what you're praying for in your grandkids' homes? Is this what governs your approach to family life? An utter dependence on the Lord in the mundane matters of life, particularly in your home. That brings us to number two. There's a second element in this blueprint for a blessed home, and it is a faithful stewardship to the Lord in the familial matters of life. A faithful stewardship to the Lord in the familial matters of life. Look at verses 3 through 5. Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is our reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate. I love these verses. I love these verses. Verse 5, how blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. My wife was convinced that a quiver full is 5. Guess how many kids we have? 5. These verses speak about the blessing of children. They speak about the gift of children, the kindness of God in the children He gives us. Look at verse 3. He says, behold, meaning listen, pay attention, sit up, and let me instruct you. Solomon says, you must understand that children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. They're gifts. Children are gifts. They are kindnesses from the Lord. They are His providential blessing. They are to be highly prized and valued because God gives good gifts. And notice what He calls them at the end of verse 2. He calls them, or 3, He says they're the fruit of the womb is a reward. This is God's reward to you, parents. You have grandkids, this is true. If you have nieces and nephews, this is true. If you have the ability to input in the lives of young people, this is true. These are demonstrations of God's kindness. And we need to say that loud and clear because we live in a culture that doesn't believe that. Satan hates children. And Satan wants to undermine the family in a number of ways he does it. We live in a culture that thinks children are a nuisance and an inconvenience an intrusion into life, an encumbrance, a hindrance into their life, because I want my life, I want to live it my way, and these kids are raining on my parade because I don't get to do what I want to do. I don't get the hobbies and the jobs that I want. These kids are messing with my life. That's the attitude of our culture. And that's why thousands of children are aborted in this country and in the world every single day. It's heinous. It's why we're watching a public trial right now played out from a woman who killed her kids. We live in a culture that is anti-children, anti-God, anti-Christ, anti-Scripture, a culture that is hostile toward children. And parents, you've got to be careful you don't adopt this mentality. And I know that's not the case for you. I know you love your kids, but let me just ask you, do you know what a gift that they are? With all the troubles and all the challenges and all the trials that come from rearing children, do you understand they're a gift? A reward? And have you ever told them that? Have you ever said to them, you are such a gift to me. We prayed for you for years. You are so valuable to us. We can't even articulate in words how much you mean to us. Do you ever say that to your kids? They're a gift. Because they're a gift, they've been entrusted to you. And you're to steward them well. That's the idea. You get a gift, and you need to steward them well, meaning they need your attention, they need your affection, they need you to pour into them. I was reading a book a little while ago on elders. There's a chapter in there called The Tragedy of Distracted Dads. He says, quote, "The gratuitously distracted and often unexamined lives of modern unmarried men might be concerning enough. Then the seriousness of the problem rises higher when we say I do, and even more when we bring children into the world, one of the greatest needs wives and children have. And all the more in our relentlessly distracting age is dad's countercultural attentiveness. Perhaps human attention never has been more valuable." Dads, moms, are you engaged? He's getting at the technological age that we live in when everyone's staring at a device. Are you present? Are you engaged? Are you attentive? Are you aware of your kids and they're growing up and you've got very short amount of years? I just heard recently parents typically have 19 years with their kids, 18 in the home, and the rest of their life can be put into one more year after that you get time with them. You have a short window. And so because they're gifts to us, because they're the God's reward to us, we are then called to give ourselves in service to the needs of our children. That's the idea here. Solomon is saying you have to understand the incredible gift that your children are to you. And you should be investing in them. You should be pouring into them because they're valuable. And what's valuable, you steward well. How do you do this? Write down this verse, Proverbs 23, verse 26. Solomon says, "Give me your heart, my son, and let your eyes delight in my ways." It's my